Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Petr Nečas will meet with the President on Monday to hand over the resignation of Trade and Industry Minister Martin Kocourek. The head of Aircraft Industries, who survived a deadly shooting spree at the company's Gunovice plant on Thursday, has been released from hospital. Detectives from the Anti-Organized Crime Unit have charged three suspects with illegal arms dealing. Prime Minister Petr Nečas will meet with the President on Monday to hand over the resignation of Trade and Industry Minister Martin Kocourek, who on Wednesday announced his decision to leave the cabinet amidst allegations of corruption. The Prime Minister is also likely to propose a successor to the post from his own Civic Democratic Party. Among the possible candidates for the position are Zbigniew Stanjura, head of the party's deputies group in the lower house, one of the party's leading economic experts Michal Doktor, and former Industry and Trade Minister Martin Ziman. The head of Aircraft Industries, Ilona Pluskova, injured in a shooting spree at the company's Gunovice plant on Thursday, has been released from hospital. According to sources, she suffered only light injuries in the tragedy and will continue her recovery at home. The shooting saw three people, including the gunman, die. The police, meanwhile, on Thursday night completed their investigation at the site, with the next focus to be on autopsies of the victims and the assailant in the attack. According to sources, the deadly assault may have been revenge for an accident that left the suspect's brother, arms magnate Pavel Musila, with permanent brain damage. Following the shooting, the attacker turned his weapon on himself. Detectives from the Anti-Organized Crime Unit have charged three suspects with illegal arms dealing. One of the men, the head of a suspected gang operating in the Czech Republic, is reportedly a former police officer himself. The trio were reportedly involved in the sales of banned automatic weapons and ammunition. If found guilty, each could face up to 8 years in prison. The illegal sales were said to repeatedly have taken place in areas of north and central Bohemia, involving seven weapons worth more than 200,000 crowns. Some of the items were retrofitted, featuring equipment currently used by some countries' special forces. The head of the gang will remain in custody, awaiting trial. Turning to sport, Czech downhill skier Ondřej Bank has expressed satisfaction after training at Pitztal, Austria this week, his first time on skis since suffering from a serious illness. At the beginning of the summer, Bank came down with an unknown disease after returning from a holiday in Thailand. He spent weeks in hospital suffering high fevers, weakness, and weight loss. To date, a series of tests was unable to reveal the cause. The skier joked about his situation at one point, saying he no longer knew who to call and might try to call Dr. House, referring to a popular television series. Slowly, his condition has improved to the point where he began training again, and he's reportedly leaving his options open regarding the World Cup. Finally, just a quick look at the weather. Sunny but cold conditions are expected at the weekend, with temperatures reaching highs of only around 6 degrees Celsius. I'm Jan Wellinger. That's the news.
Hello and welcome to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. My name's Christian Falvey. Many thanks for tuning in. Today we say farewell to a legend of the Czech underground, poet Ivan Martin Jiros, who died in Prague on Thursday at the age of 67. After that, we'll have the news in business, and later on in the program in the arts, we'll be talking to an organizer from the annual Mezipatra Queer Film Festival, looking at many topics, including this.
We're specifically looking into sci-fi, and to be precise, we are looking at Star Trek and how queerness is represented on this cult series.
I hope you'll be staying with us today for all that and more here on Radio Prague. One of the legends of the Czech underground, poet Ivan Martin Jiros, died in Prague on Thursday at the age of 67. Ivan Jiros, or Magor, literally the crazy one, as he was affectionately called by his friends, was perhaps best known as the artistic manager and spiritual leader of the underground band The Plastic People of the Universe. But this eternal rebel was also a sensitive, contemplative poet and master of the Czech language. Pavla Horáková looks back at the life and work of this extraordinary personality.
V neštěstí se vždycky bytě vracím k religiozitě, jak se však trochu zabydlím, už se zas ani nemodlím.
Ivan Martin Jirous himself reciting one of his reflective poems in which he appeals to God and begs for forgiveness. In his numerous poetry collections, first published illegally in the 1970s and 80s, Jirous addressed basic human values, the human condition, the paradox of existence, longing for transcendence and salvation. Literary critic Josef Chuchma.
Jirous v poezii neřeší nic více a nic méně než otázku.
In his poetry, Jirous occupies himself with the soul, with the question whether to sell your soul or not. In a unique way, his poetry mixes spontaneity, worldliness, and earthiness with the most supreme issues of faith, eternity, and God.
For his lifelong literary work, Ivan Martin Jirous was awarded the Jaroslav Seifert Prize in Prague in 2006. But official artistic recognition came only late in his life. Jirous did not choose an easy path to tread. Always going against the grain of the authorities, his rebellious nature earned him 5 prison sentences under communism, including that for his involvement with the band The Plastic People of the Universe. Although educated in art history at Charles University, Jirous was only allowed to work as a manual laborer between his jail sentences. A man of strong principles, he always maintained he did all on his own behalf. This is what he said in a recent interview for Czech Radio.
Nigdy. Jsem nebojoval za náš českomoravský národ.
I never fought for our Czech Moravian nation. I always fought on my own behalf. I served 8.5 years in prison for that, but that's the price you pay for pride. And I'm perfectly willing to serve another 8.5 years, and I absolutely don't care what kind of regime is in power. Sincerely, I fought for myself, and the fact that it had an impact on my friends and people around who may have made some decisions under my influence is of secondary importance.
A hot-headed rebel, Ivan Martin Jirous never minced his words and often liked to pick a fight in pubs. But literary critics agree his poetry expressed extraordinary tenderness.
Teprve teď opravdu víš, doma seš tam, kde se oběsíš.
Many thanks to Pavla Horáková for that report. This is Radio Prague. In recent years, St. Martin's Day has become a welcome opportunity for Czech winemakers to present their young wines. The revived tradition of St. Martin's wines has caught on, and November 11th has become a fixture in the calendar of Czech wine lovers. Jan Richter went to a St. Martin's wine festival in Prague's Vinohrady neighborhood and has this report.
At 11 hours and 11 minutes on the 11th of November, a toast and a fanfare marked the opening of a wine market on Prague's Jiřího z Poděbrad Square. Dozens of stalls offer this year's fresh vintage of white and rosé wines, mainly from the Czech Republic's major winemaking region of South Moravia. One of the winemakers presenting his produce is Jan Vorba.
I'm from a little family winery, Vinařství Kubík, from Velké Bílovice, and we have here the special occasion wine, Svatomartinské víno. We inspired from France, and now we are making this young wine. Then we have the regular produce from our wines, especially the late harvests and selections of grapes.
Mm. Is this your first time here in such an event in Prague?
Yes, and actually this is we call it zero anniversary, so it's the first time at this place.
The tradition of St. Martin's vintage, popular before the war, has been revived by the Czech Winemakers Association to promote their produce and provide opportunities for smaller producers to present their wines to the public. Ladislav Merkva is from the Rosetta Winery in a small village of Radejov on the Slovak border.
We are very small, and small wineries have very very big problem with presentation in big cities, because if you are very small, you cannot go to the markets and other place where go a lot of people to buy wine.
The St. Martin's Wine Market in Vinohrady also offers the typical St. Martin's dish, roast goose with cabbage and dumplings, and other foods like hams, cheeses and so on. Despite the time of day, and a work day at that, the event attracted hundreds of people moving from stall to stall with wine glasses. 67-year-old Lubomír Zemánek, who says he has Moravian roots, is a regular visitor to the event.
It shows what this year's harvest has been, what the wines will be like. If you are really interested, you probably already know, but it's always nice to taste them right here, in this environment.
The market also draws foreign visitors to Prague, curious about the St. Martin feast as well as the area. Klaus Burr and his wife came from Denmark.
We have been here several times in Prague, but we have only visited the normal tourist attractions and so on in the center, the town hall square and all that around this. And then we thought, we read an article in a Danish newspaper about this area, Siskov or something like that. And we would try to visit it and see how a normal Prague working class area looked like. We thought it was interesting. And then it coincided with the Beaujolais Nouveau, with the new wine coming here. And we were amazed to see the stalls here and the music and so on. It's a real people's life here.
The St. Martin's Vintage event in Vinohrady and elsewhere in Prague and around the country go on over the weekend. On our website, you'll find a link to more information.
That was Jan Richter there with that report. Now I'm joined in our studio by Daniela Lazarova for a look at this week's business news.
Despite the gloomy economic predictions, the week started well for the governing coalition, which overturned a Senate veto to push through 14 reform bills through the Lower House. The bills, which still have to be signed by the president, are expected to take effect in January of 2011. They will launch an overhaul of the publicly funded pension system by introducing a private pension scheme and a higher retirement age, make Czechs take on more financial responsibility for the healthcare they receive, affect some tax changes, and significantly tighten the rules on welfare in a bid that is expected to bring the country's public finance deficit under control.
Although the government's tax reform was approved, the coalition this week agreed on postponing it until 2014. Finance Minister Miroslav Kalousek rejected speculation that this was a concession to the opposition, saying the postponement was necessary in view of harmonizing the change of legislation with the civil code. Changes to gambling taxation alone will take effect as of the beginning of next year.
During the vote, the governing coalition broke ranks on two counts. In one instance, the Civic Democrats allied with the opposition to push through an amendment to the lottery taxation bill, under which lottery companies alone would decide on who gets a third of the tax revenues, and part of the revenues would also go to the education sector. Under the original coalition agreement, the revenues were to have been divided between municipalities and the state in a 70-30 ratio. According to Top 09, which is furious over the outcome, municipalities will now lose out on approximately 3 billion crowns a year. In another vote that has divided the governing coalition, the Junior Public Affairs Party joined forces with the opposition to maintain the existing system of tax relief for meal vouchers, a very popular form of benefits for communal catering used by many employees.
There was gloomy news from Brussels this week as the European Commission revised downward its growth forecast for the Czech economy for both this and next year. According to figures released on Thursday, the EC expects the Czech economy to grow by a mere 1.8% this year, down from an earlier 2% forecast, while next year's growth estimate is now at 0.7%, down from a previous 2.9%. The predictions are more dire than those released both by the International Monetary Fund and the Czech Finance Ministry. The ministry's latest growth predictions speak of a 2.1% growth this year and a 1% growth in 2012. According to the EC, the Czech Republic's public finance deficit, which serves as a yardstick for assessing an EU member's readiness to adopt the euro, will drop to 3.8% of GDP next year, which would exceed the government's target of 3.5% of economic output.
Inflation unexpectedly accelerated to the fastest pace in 10 months in October. The inflation rate rose to 2.3% from 1.8% in September, according to figures released by the Czech Statistical Office. Consumer prices rose 0.3% from the previous month.
Many thanks to Daniela Lazarová. If you're just tuning in, then thank you for joining us. You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. I'm Christian Falvey. This Thursday saw the opening of the 12th annual Mezipatra Queer Film Festival in the Czech Republic. In this week's Arts, Jan Willinger talks to the director of the festival, Aleš Rumpel, who discussed not only this year's main theme, but also its focus on the work of Todd Haynes. Also discussed are gay and lesbian issues in the Czech Republic, gay studies, as well as gay readings of the popular sci-fi series Star Trek. Jan began by asking about this year's theme.
Every edition of the festival doesn't only show random queer films, but we always have sort of an overarching theme that tries to say something about what it's like to be queer, but also might be interesting to the straight audience that makes up to 50% of our turnout. And time travel, because we think that the way people lived in the past when they loved people of the same sex is quite an unknown phenomenon. People haven't written too many books about it yet, and it's, I think, still quite a new topic. And I think it's exciting to see films from the Middle Ages about queers. So that's why we chose this topic. But also, on the other hand, we're looking into the future to see what being queer might mean. And we're specifically looking into sci-fi, and to be precise, we're looking at Star Trek and how queerness is represented on this cult series.
That's something I certainly want to get into. But before we discuss Star Trek, for example, specifically, and some of those other films, let's talk about the trailer for the festival, because that sort of alludes to what you're talking about the future. It's set in a spaceship, a Barbarella-type spaceship.
That's right.
Which is manned by a gay couple, a homosexual couple, but they have a little baby, and one of the men, the mother, breastfeeds the baby using a kind of strap-on milk bottles instead of breasts. Was it the aim of the trailer or the teaser to provoke somewhat? Because it's also presented as an advertisement, which seems to be a little bit satirical.
It is. It is a sort of a, we call it teleshopping in the Czech context. And there is a presenter who's talking about the advantages of the device, which the brand of it is Dobrý táta in Czech. It means a good daddy. And there is a real functioning phone number that the audience can call in order to purchase good daddy. And it is satirical. It is a commentary on the present state of things in which gay and lesbian couples are raising kids without any institutional support, or maybe even against it, because it's really complicated law-wise to bring up children in same-sex families. And Tamara Moises, who's a political artist, had a strong point to make, because she's really concerned, as a mother, she is really concerned about the fact that there's so many children without homes and so many children in queer families who just lack support of the state.
Mm-hmm. Does it also, to a degree, say, provoke people who might be more part of a mainstream or conservative view, who, for example, don't want to hear about same-sex marriage, don't want to hear about gay adoption?
To provoke in the meaning of to stimulate discussion and to stimulate dialogue, yes.
But it's been a strange year in the Czech Republic, because on the one hand, Czech society is known as being fairly tolerant of gays and lesbians. On the other, this year, a lot of very conservative elements, high-profile figures came to the fore, including the country's president, including some of his aides at Prague Castle, and others connected, such as a former official at the education ministry, highly controversial figure on the political right. And they have made queer issues an issue this year and sort of created a bit of a backlash. In that context, do you think that this year's Mezipatra is perhaps more important than some of those that preceded it?
Well, I'd say that they tried to create a backlash, and I'm not quite sure whether they succeeded. The Prague Pride, which was the context for the controversial remarks, I think showed that there's too many people that won't listen to this, and the general turnout of the Prague Pride far exceeded the expectations of the organizers, and I think that's exactly because of the homophobic rhetorics of some of the local politicians. So conservative, I think this is almost derogatory to say conservative. I think conservative is a good value, but I would call it homophobic. So the homophobic politicians, I think, tried to create an issue to win popularity and failed to do so. But I don't think that will affect the festival itself.
Mm-hmm. Nevertheless, it is a concern because I know that, for example, we got a lot of response on the social networks from our listeners or readers abroad who were shocked or very concerned that these kind of views could still be expressed in the 21st century.
Yeah, that's definitely a bad news for the Czech Republic, I think. But luckily, there were a lot of conservative politicians responding to the homophobic rhetorics, like the mayor of Prague, for instance. So I think it's really important to have plurality of voices. And in the past, there haven't been enough vocal politicians addressing queer issues positively. There were maybe a few, but I think it's really important always to stand up and express the opposite view when there is homophobia or racism expressed in the political arena.
Okay, well, let's turn to the festival itself. Some of the filmmakers and films being highlighted this year, one of your guests is going to be Todd Haynes. He's the director of films like Velvet Goldmine, Far From Heaven, and of course that most recent Bob Dylan film, I'm Not There. How significant is his work in terms of, say, identity or queer issues?
Very much so. Todd Haynes and one of the other festival guests, Tom Kalin, who's presiding over the international jury of the festival, are representatives of a wave of films that was later called New Queer Cinema. Those are independent American films from the 90s who were really among the first films to present a very different image of what queerness is to the Hollywood mainstream, both in terms of the thematics, but also in terms of the aesthetics. So Todd Haynes' work has been incredibly influential on the entire American independent scene, but also on queer films that are not independent, that are sort of modeled on the regular a girl meets boy, boy meets girl formula that's prevailing in most films. And in terms of identity, I think it's really important that these filmmakers have backgrounds in semiotics and cultural studies and political studies. So their films are very political in the way they address issues and in the way they're structured.
Mm-hmm. And I've read that Todd Haynes was, in fact, the director who discovered Julianne Moore. I'm not sure if that's true.
That's true. One of the films in his retrospective at Masipatra is Save from 1994, I believe. And it's the first film in which Julianne Moore has a leading role. And it's an incredible film that's not gay or lesbian explicitly. It's about a housewife in a very well set West Coast suburban setting who develops an allergy to everything, mostly. So it is a metaphor of consumerism and also of AIDS. And this is the kind of complex narratives that Todd Haynes likes to create. It's not only about men or women in love. It's very political, very subtle.
One of the things that you mentioned was that a large part of the audience are heterosexuals. Was this always the case with Masipatra, or is this something that has changed over the years?
We started doing questionnaires and research into our audiences only about the fifth edition of the festival, I think. But it hasn't changed since then, and we're very grateful for that. We've always tried to do a large festival for a large and varied audience. And a lot of colleagues from abroad have complimented on this, because most queer festivals abroad are really for the queer community, which is perfectly fine. But I think it's really necessary to have straight people coming in and sharing the space and the discussions in the festival. And I think that's what's also interesting is that we always have sort of an academic leg to the festival, so that both in Brno and in Prague, there is always a class of students who is taking a queer studies course and who are coming to the festival. And in Prague, it's particularly interesting that there is a group of students of George Washington University who are coming all the way from Washington to meet their counterparts from the Charles University who are taking the course together, and during the festival they have a discussion. And I think this connecting of different kinds of audiences, people and views is what makes Mezipatra so open to the straight audiences.
If we talk about Mezipatra, it's more than just a film festival, of course. There are many different accompanying events, and there's the academic aspect to it, which you've already touched upon. And there's the Star Trek aspect, which you touched upon. Now, I understand the title of the lecture is Queer Tendencies in Star Trek. Are these queer tendencies that are already latent in the original series or the follow-ups, or is it something else?
It's about the latent homosexual tendencies in Star Trek. It's really interesting to realize that Star Trek has always been very inclusive in terms of actors from different racial backgrounds, but it has been very reluctant to have openly queer content up until maybe mid-90s. So the lecture will be looking both into the explicit queerness of the show, but also into the latent energy. And when we're talking about Kirk and Spock, which is a very famous and very popular subject to slashing, which is a fan production, we'll be having a session on Slash as well within the cycle we call Queer Cafe. We have four talks. One of them talks about Star Trek. The other one is dedicated to Slash. The speaker will not only be talking about Slash academically, but there'll always be people, Czech authors, reading their Slash stories about, I'm not sure whether it's about Watson or Sherlock Holmes or the Star Trek characters. There's so many popular narratives retold as gay narratives in the Slash tradition. So I'll be very curious about that. And also we have one talk about classic Czech films from the 50s and 70s and how they can be read in a queer way.
This is the 12th year that Mezipatra has been put together. It's not only in Prague, it started in Brno, it's based in both cities. Do you think that things have changed significantly since the first Mezipatra was introduced?
For the festival, definitely. It grew tremendously. The first edition only had about 8 films, I think, and 800 audiences. This edition has 83 films. We have international guests. There's a film in international premiere at the festival. It's called Mary Mary from a New York-based filmmaker, Alexandra Doxo, which is exciting. And the festival was seen by about 85,000 people over the past 11 years. So it grew from a small event in Brno to a major festival. And I'm very grateful for all the people that made it possible. So things have changed tremendously. And even the fact that people like Todd Haynes or Tom Kalin are coming to Prague, I think, really shows that it's now a respected festival.
That was director of the Mezipatra Queer Film Festival, Aleš Rumpel, talking to Jan Wellinger for that edition of The Arts. And that wraps up Radio Prague's English program for today. Don't forget that you can hear that program again and every other at our internet address, radio.cz. If you have any questions, we are always happy to hear them. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook under Radio Prague. For me, Christian Falvey, thanks for listening.